Alex Atwin is a very dear friend of yours. So tell us about him. When did you first meet him?
I'm not too sure when I first met him. I do remember that he was stationed with the UPI in the Tulsa World Building. I believe he came there in about 1960. I do remember him very well from 1963 to 65 because I was state editor and I worked with him in some capacity in those years. So I've known him since the early 60s. Later on, of course, I became much closer to him and we worked together. Alex, I have to pry things out of him about himself just bit by bit over the years because he doesn't talk about particularly his accomplishments. As I gather it from his dad and sister and other people, Alex was born at Maud, Oklahoma. He was in public school there until they shipped him off to Oklahoma Military Academy as a freshman. So that would have been in roughly 1947. I'm told that he skipped two grades at Maud. Other people told me that he'd read every book in the Maud library by the time they sent him to OMA. And I know that jibes with what I know about him today. He is a voracious reader till this day. Alex just read a book called London, which is a two-inch thick tome. It starts back virtually with the cooling of the earth about London and brings it all the way up. Anecdotally, I tried to read that myself about 10 years ago, and I got about 10, 15 pages deep in it, and it was so minute and detailed that I gave it up. But it's just as well because Alex is telling me all about it. I jokingly say, and it's not far from the truth, is I don't have to read much because Alex will review the books that he's reading. And anyway, Alex graduated from high school and junior college at OMA, went off to OU, where he graduated in 1950 at the age of 20. He recalls that when Ada Lois Sipiel Fisher finally was admitted to the law school and
at
Oklahoma University, remembers her being given a chair marked colored and then roped off from the rest of the class. He tells all those against the backdrop of civil rights and all the things that are going on now. He's lived through every bit of that and was very cognizant of what was going on during that period. Coincidentally, he was a tank commander in Korea. You know, OMA was a cavalry unit that became the armored unit, as I understand it. So instead of a horse, he had a tank to command, and he became a squadron commander. And, you know, all that was at the tender age probably of 20, 21.
Tell us again, OMA means what?
Oklahoma Military Academy.
Right.
In those days, now the current Roger State University.
Okay.
Alex seldom talks about that except to tell a joke or an amusing story about something that happened to him in the military. But I have heard from others and kind of pried it out of him, too. He was scheduled to go home, and they had an operation that night, an excursion into enemy territory. He stayed and went on that excursion rather than sending his substitute into it. They got off across the river. I've kind of forgotten the details, but they had to abandon their tanks. Lieutenant Adwan, I guess he was lieutenant at that point, had to lead the whole bunch back. And I think he got a Bronze Star for that. Now, I may be a little bit off on that, and Alex wouldn't tell you. But he's had such a varied newspaper experience. You know, he came back to his native town of Seminole, where his dad by this time was running a haberdashery. And he worked during high school and OMA years and so on part-time for the old Seminole producer. When he came back from Korea, he went to work for the producer, where he worked with people he talks about with great reverence, men named Milt and Tom Phillips, who were the owners and publishers of the Seminole producer. And while Alex was working there, they began to set up a chain. And Tom Phillips, the younger of the Phillips brothers, died. So that kind of, as I get it, put a damper on the chain. But during that time, Alex became a partner with these fellows. They had newspapers at Paul's Valley, Holdenville, and he worked at those areas. So he knows Oklahoma from that standpoint of that rural experience. When he left Seminole, he went to work for the United Press International. That's when he came to Tulsa, and I can't say exactly what date that was, but it was in the early 60s. From Tulsa, he went to Houston as the bureau manager of UPI, and then he came back to Oklahoma City as a bureau manager. And, of course, he rubbed shoulders with our people in Oklahoma City.
Meaning the Tulsa World people.
Yes. I believe in about 1966, the World hired him to be the Washington correspondent. In those days, we had a reporter permanently stationed in Washington as the Washington reporter. So he was there during the civil rights years, during the deaths of Martin Luther King. Remembers machine guns stationed around the U.S. Capitol, looking over Washington and seeing it burning in many different places during those uprisings. He, of course, has very telling anecdotes to tell about those years. While he was there, one of his colleagues, a fellow named Carter Bradley, is a well-known fellow in newspaper and journalism circles who was working for the UPI. And then I think in Washington in those days, Carter had gone to work for U.S. Senator Robert S. Kerr and then later Senator Mike Mulroney. Carter had a daughter named Teresa. And it was there that Teresa Bradley met and married Alex Admon, and they are my close friends to this day. What is so impressive, Alex, is we renewed our acquaintance, of course, when I was a political reporter and business editor for The World. Alex had come back to the Tulsa World as an editorial writer in 1972. I was covering politics and later was a business editor for a brief time, and then from there, a vacancy opened up in the editorial room, and Walter Biscuit, for whom I had worked as a copy boy, asked for me to fill that vacancy. And I know that Alex had a hand in that because he was in the department and I had gotten acquainted with him. And so in an indirect way, I partially owe my editorial writing job to Alex. I'm sure of that. The two of us were the two editorial writers under Walter Biscuit, who had been with The World since 1926. He died in 1981, and then Alex became editor of the editorial pages. Alex retired from that job in 1994, but he promised to continue to write a weekly column for us. He was first signed to a 5-year consultant contract by Robert Lorton. But when that was up, both Lorton and I insisted that he continue as a consultant for several years afterward, which he did, continuing to write probably, I always thought, the best column that we had continually on paper. There was not a presumptuous bone in Alex's body. He would tell almost anything, usually with himself or the butt of the joke. And he was famous for being, let's call it inept when it came to mechanical things. David Averill once said that he would be the man the staff would vote most likely to get his tie caught in the pencil sharp. And Alex had no pretense about that. To this day, he will talk about, well, I just can't do that. I got to call the plumber or whatever. During those years, we usually went to lunch together, I mean, almost constantly, except every now and then somebody would call and he'd step into my office and say, I can't go to lunch today. I've got a better offer, and which he did. Till this day, we have lunch at least once a week, which we both call our therapy session because we sit and poison each other's minds. But Alex, you know, he has a prodigious mind. I've never known what his IQ was, but it must be off the charts. Beyond that, though, it's not just mere intelligence. He has a wisdom about himself, and he is above all a student. He just has a real need to continually learn. I've told you about the book about London. It's just kind of typical, but he's liable to talk to you about ancient history at one point or another at any given time. He's a voracious reader. But more or less, he's mostly a student of human nature. He knows himself real well. Therefore, he knows other people well. And he has a way, when he's writing an editorial or considering a public problem or any kind of a personal problem, of putting himself in the other fellow's place. And I've had him tell me more than once that if some fellow does something we didn't like, Alex would say, yes, but we need to put the Herb Carner test on it. In other words, if Herb Carner, who is a good friend of both of us, said that, we would be very charitable with him. So we needn't be overly judgmental of someone who said something. It's because we didn't like it. You know, he's an excellent historian. not only his training, but his reading has made him just an expert in American history. He knows more than most about Civil War, has read nearly everything ever written about Abraham Lincoln, including the big volumes of Sandburg. I set out to read those and did, but I was 50 years old trying to learn about that. Alex had probably read them when they were written, not quite. But both of us, we believe that it's awfully hard to understand the events of today if you don't have a real good understanding of the Civil War and the results of the Civil War. Along that line, he is just an encyclopedia on World War I, as well as World War II, but he's particularly, I think, emotionally, my judgment is, with World War I because he was named after an uncle who was killed only a short time before the armistice in 1918. His uncle's name was Alex K. Edwin, and that's why I call Alex A.K. at times. He uses the K as his middle name, but he has no middle name. It's Alex K. Edwin, as was his uncle. I believe him to be probably one of the finest writers to grace the pages of the world. He's as good as some of the better-known national columnists today. And if he had been in a little different milieu, he would have been right up there with all of them. He consistently writes with authority, turning out factually based opinion pieces that usually had a very wise and a slightly different view that left you thinking, my goodness, that's so good. Why didn't I think of it? You know, you were just envious that he thought of that particular thing. I worked with Alex as an fellow editorial writer for 5 years, in which we were struggling not to write about the same topic. Then when he took over in 81, I worked for him for 13 years. And then after that, I guess technically he worked for me. Given all of that, I know that when I was working with him or for him, I know for sure that he went to bat with the management more than once for me, particularly when I was a little bit far out on something and he was trying to, as he would put it, defend my honor. And he constantly encouraged us, not only me, but everybody working for him, to achieve more, to do whatever we could. And I've heard him say to me more than once, Ken, anything you do is just water on my paddle. He had a way of condensing things into those little phrases like that, that is pretty well summed up exactly what you're talking about. As I've said before, he just has no pretense. Most of his humor and his stories make himself the butt of the joke. I mean, he tells things on himself that sometimes you think, well, I don't believe I told that. But he doesn't have to worry about pretense because, as he would say it, he said it about Henry Bellman and numerous other people I've heard him talk. He said, well, he knows who he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't have to pretend to be anything because he knows who he is. Mm-hmm. Well, Alex Edwin knows who he is. That's made him a terrific guy.